South Korea calls for the arrest of the acting head of Samsung. Twitter gives trolls a timeout. Artificial intelligence will help Google's loon balloons blanket the world with internet soon. And we will delve into the exciting world of quasi-static cavity resonance. All that and more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1707, recorded Thursday, February 16th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the important stuff in technology.
Mm-hmm. Today.
Today. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Not yesterday, although we did have a Tech News Today yesterday when yesterday was today. But now today is today, so we've got a new Tech News Today. Today. Starting with Samsung. I've lost track of time there. I apologize. I blanked out for a second. The Seoul Central District Court in South Korea issued an arrest warrant for J.Y. Lee, acting head of Samsung, alleging bribery, perjury, and embezzlement. The court is seeking his arrest as a way to prevent the destruction of evidence or possibly fleeing the country, as the trial could be rather lengthy. Lee allegedly paid close to $38 million, when you convert to dollars, of course, to South Korean President Park Geun-hye in an attempt to solidify his chances at maintaining his position within Samsung. Samsung is South Korea's most powerful and influential company by far, very kind of critical to Samsung economy, I have to imagine, because it's something like 30 or 40%. I can't remember the exact figure, but pretty intense.
Yeah, so this reverses the decision from last month that we talked about that said they said they weren't going to arrest him, but they are. South Korea's democracy is really young still, relatively speaking. And I think they're just figuring out, how to stop this corruption that happens. Like, just a few families have most of the business, like you said, most of the businesses, most of the income, the chaebol, as Elise Yu told us that it's called. And so I think that this is good news that they're arresting him with the evidence that they have.
Yeah. Lee took over for his father, Lee Kin-hee, who was hospitalized in 2014. Obviously, he wanted to secure a place for himself in control of the company. And so basically, this is all about a potential bribe that would have greased the wheels of the merger of two Samsung Group holding companies. If that merger were to have happened, that would have led to more control from the Lee family and ultimately would have led to, more likely than not, J.Y. Lee staying in his position. He also is vice chairman of Samsung Electronics, and we have the upcoming Galaxy S8 right around the corner and everything. So, I mean, the S8 obviously is probably not going to be hurt by this because it's already in the pipeline, but that could be interesting to see what the effect of this could be on, let's say, Samsung's phones going forward.
Mm-hmm. Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed says Twitter has begun to put abusers in a, quote, timeout.
Timeout.
Last week, the company began rolling out a temporary throttle for accounts seen as abusive in order to prevent people from harassing users. Now, if Twitter detects that the content of your tweet has violated their rules, they will send you a notification that says your account features have been temporarily limited. And if the person that you've tweeted at does not follow you, they will then not see your tweets in their mentions. So they're carefully avoiding censorship by just not showing the person that you are harassing I say you, but of course no one listening to this would ever
do that.
You wouldn't. Also, if you retweet something that is abusive, then the person that you retweet won't see that in their mentions. So this is a pattern of abuse. That's what Twitter says, that they're detecting a certain amount of certain words, a long list of words, in addition to a pattern of abuse. And I do not think people are in charge of seeing, you know, looking for these patterns. I'm guessing that it's a kind of algorithm.
Well, I'm actually thinking that it's more like a reporting of some kind. I don't know. I was trying to look into it to find out if this is automatic or if it's based on someone being reported as to have been abusive. And I think the latter is probably what's going on here. If someone has done something, someone else reports that person, that puts them into, you know, marks them in some way, shape, or form. And then, I guess I don't understand the entire protocol of, does that then mean that going forward, everything they say is run through this algorithm and checked? But I don't know. I think it's a good move. I think Twitter has to control its network. It's its network after all. And Twitter doesn't have a very good, has not had a very good reputation based on its history for being, I don't know, a place where it's easy to have control as a user over what you see and what you don't see, and being able to kind of avoid some of the intense heat that you can get when you're on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, they for a long time have really favored free speech over trying to protect people. And so these features have existed. You know, we've heard that they used some for like an AMA on Twitter with Obama, but like that existed, but nobody else got to use it. So now it seems like the technology is there and it's spreading a little bit. Of course, they haven't said exactly, you know, they haven't outlined exactly what you will get booted for, I think, because they don't want people to just do workarounds from that, use different words, which we already know people on Twitter have this whole dictionary of different words that they use to mean things that, so that they, you know, get by those filters. So yeah, I think it is a good first step. Right now, it looks like the timeout lasts 12 hours, according to people who have already experienced it and tweeted about it.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if a move like this, I have to imagine in some ways, is going to push some people away from the network. You know, this could end up being kind of the final straw of like, really, you're gonna ramp, you know, down my activity, and then fine, there are other places for me to go. I think it could also bring users in, though, because Twitter does have the reputation that it has right now. And thankfully, they've been getting in the news, showing that they care and showing that they're trying to figure it out. And are they making the right move? I don't know, but I think putting a little bit more control in the hands of people, of general users, and showing them that they have those tools, as long as they're transparent enough, I think that's a good move. A new feature is rolling out to Google Home users that Amazon Echo users have enjoyed since the device launched. I believe they had that at launch for Echo. Now home users can purchase everyday items from companies like Costco, Whole Foods, Bed Bath & Beyond, and a bunch more, thanks to new support for Google Express within Home. Users simply say, okay, G, order paper towels. And Home will say, got it, ordering the paper towels, and the order will be placed. Users must enter payment information into the Home app to get started. Is this something that you do on Echo? Do you order things all the time, day and night?
I have ordered one thing on my Amazon Echo, and that was the Echo Dot. And the only reason I ordered it was because you had to use an Amazon Echo in order to order it. That's the only way you could order it.
At the beginning?
When they first came out, you had to use your Amazon Echo in order to order it. So that was the only... I don't use it to buy anything else. I thought about it. I mean, I know that it's easy if you regularly order something from Amazon, but I never have. I have used Google Express, and I do, I really like it. The only thing that stops me is that, you know, subscription fee, which is $95 a year or something, and I already pay for Amazon Prime, and I already pay for Costco yearly membership, and it just seems like too much. But I love, there's so many places that I shop that are on Amazon Express, like Costco, Target, you know, all kinds of places. There's a whole long list. But I don't have a Google Home, so.
Well, I guess you'll just have to get one. You'll have to get rid of your Echo and replace it with a Google Home. One of us. One of us.
Yeah, and also, I like how you called it G.
Yo, G.
You can't say that to it, but we're not going to say the actual word.
We're trying our best.
We don't want to order toilet paper for you. That's your job.
That's right.
Makers of spectacular rainbow vomit filters, Snap, has lowered its valuation expectations in its eagerly anticipated IPO. The company set market value for its initial public offering at between $19.5 billion and $22.2 billion, which is less than the rumored $25 billion valuation. That's a valuation range of $14 to $16 a share for the offering of 230 million shares. Snap is also the first company in the U.S. to issue non-voting shares, which means if you buy Snap shares, you will have to trust Evan Spiegel, who, I will remind you, was born in the year 1990.
I trust everyone that was born in the year 1990.
Good. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to buy any shares. We don't really buy tech. We're not allowed to buy the tech stock. So
yeah,
we can't, and we can't tell you whether to trust Evan Spiegel or not. But that's just weird, I guess. They're the first company to do that, to have non-voting shares.
Well, I mean, but at the same time, they've brought Snap to the place that it is right now. So they obviously are doing something right. And maybe they know their company more than those pesky shareholders that are making that are lining their pockets. Evan Spiegel, by the way, worth $4.22 billion once the IPO happens. The co-founder, Bobby Murphy, $3.63 billion, most of that in the form of Snap stock once it IPOs. And then Spiegel and Murphy also plan to sell 16 million shares at that point as well for an additional $256 million in cash. So, you know, they can instantly become more millionaire than they already are.
Right. But it looks bad to sell stock in your own company right away. It does not look so good.
Well, I don't know. I more interpreted that as, all right, we've worked really hard. We finally got to the IPO. Now let's become uber millionaires, like right out of the gate. Like, I don't necessarily see that as being Spiegel being like, oh, we got to get out quick. Mm-hmm. I think that's just, I want my mansion. It's time for me to have my mansion.
Okay. Well, they said it's almost time because Recode, Kurt Wagner, says March 1st, they're going to place the valuation, and March 2nd, it's going to go public. And they can change it at the last minute. Facebook changed their price at offering right before it went public, right at the last minute. And then it went up a little bit, but then went down on the first day of trading. So, and that's, I think, a better comparison, Snap and Facebook, rather than Snap and Twitter.
Yeah, I would agree. When are we going to make our own social network camera messaging company thing and be rich?
Any day now. It'll be called Burke Chat.
Burke Chat, who?
Burke says they have to report the stock sales anyway. Okay. We need to work on this Burke Chat, but we should definitely copyright that.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll work on it. Machine learning is helping Google's Project Loon balloons to cut down on the number of balloons needed to provide internet connectivity to those below. Improvements to altitude control as well as the navigation system basically mean that Google can launch fewer balloons that will make small loops over a covered area based on machine learning instead of following a set path, which is what they were doing. And every once in a while, they'd get pushed off of the path and they'd have to intercept them. I think there was a story a couple of months about one of those occurrences. This allows engineers to reduce the time needed to actually launch the project as well. So basically, it's cutting down the number of needed balloons in an area from 2 to 400 down to 10 to 30. So drastically cutting it down, which I have to imagine speeds up the entire process when you don't have to worry about an arsenal of 2 to 400 balloons.
Yeah, it's funny that, we just were talking about Snapchat, which their mission in the world is to, put different flower filters on people's heads. And as opposed to Project Loon, which also sounds a little crazy, but has a wonderful mission, really, to get the internet to places where it can't get to. And Astro Teller posted on Medium about this, and he's just one of my favorite people. He's just so funny. He says, it's still a surprise to many of us that Loon is looking as promising as it is.
We're still amazed that Loon is still around.
We just made that up, balloons putting internet everywhere, and then now we can do it with AI, and it's amazing.
Can you believe what we're able to do with all of our money? Especially in light of the fact that so many of their experimental projects are getting the axe. This is probably him like, well, I guess we're okay then.
Right.
The work continues. They're currently testing in South America. And so I don't know what this means as far as when this will start rolling out on a in a broader sense. But what can't machine learning do?
I know, exactly. I mean, it can predict where the wind will take the balloons. That's amazing. Yeah, and there's no timetable.
Yeah.
Because that's what these crazy projects, all they have to do is
they just exist forever.
It's going to be sooner than we thought. But we're still not telling you when. It is every young girl's dream, wireless power transmission.
I have to imagine, after the break.
It is. I know. You wouldn't understand it unless you had been a young girl. After the break, we're going to chat with our favorite physicist to see if it's possible. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper, if you haven't heard, is a virtual phone system designed for you, an entrepreneur. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system. So when we start up Berk Chat, we're going to get us a Grasshopper system so that we all look more professional, especially Berk. And it will require us no hardware purchase. They have an iOS and an Android app. Callers can reach us for Berk Chat wherever we are on our mobile phones. Grasshopper allows us to keep our existing number so we can maintain our brand. We want to, you know, Berk Chat, that is a serious brand. We want to be able to maintain it. Then when we make a call, that our clients will only see our Grasshopper caller ID instead of our personal phone numbers. All we have to do is select a toll-free or local number. Then we'll record a custom greeting. I'm sure we'll come up with something. And add multiple extensions for Berk and for Jason, of course. Maybe Brian, he's listening too. He might be included in our Berk chat. Maybe not. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing, and they make your business sound more professional. Set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS messages from your business number. So join over the 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That is trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support. So one of the big lingering questions about the forthcoming iPhone 8 is, will it include wireless charging? Today we learned that Disney Research has developed a method of wirelessly transmitting power throughout a room. Joining us to talk about the science behind wireless charging is physics professor and Wired.com contributor Rhett Alane. Welcome back to the show, Rhett.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we chatted about this earlier, and I asked if it was possible for you to explain quasi-static cavity resonance so that I could look smart at cocktail parties. So go.
I can do it. Okay, I actually had a visual demo for this, but that got nixed because it's my fault. Okay, so but the key here is with what we call electromagnetic induction. If you have a magnetic field, and that magnetic field changes in a loop of wire, it will generate a current. And there's no mystery there. We've done that. That's how radio receivers work. That's how electric generators work. It's not a big deal. And that's how your toothbrush charges. You know, if you have a toothbrush and you put in that little plate, then there's a coil of wire in the plate that makes a magnetic field. There's a coil of wire in the toothbrush that field changes in, and it makes a current. Now, so that's not a problem. But the problem is that if you move that toothbrush away from the plate, even a little bit, the magnetic field decreases very, very fast. And so then you don't get any charging. And so that's bad. So that's not really wireless. It's just sitting on a plate, right?
Right. So that's existed. Yeah, that exists with the Apple Watch, many Android phones.
Yeah.
But
all those do the same thing. Now, but here, what this does, what this particular room does, it's a room. It's not a device you put in a room. It's a room. So the walls are part of the device, and there's a pole in the middle. And they all set up to make a stronger magnetic field, changing magnetic field to the room. So that's how this works. Instead of putting on a plate, you're essentially in a plate, and that plate is called a room. So it's a clever way to make the magnetic field strong enough so that you could move around. If you see the video, they have these little coils of wire. When the magnetic field passes through those, you can get a current through that coil. But if the magnetic field doesn't, then you don't get a current. So that's how this particular setup works, which is still really cool. I mean, it could still have a lot of great applications. But it's not like it could be, you know, you could put it in your house without doing some severe modifications.
So there were chairs in that room. Could I sit in that room and then still expect to live to talk about it?
Yeah. Yeah, you could. I mean, because, you know, we have electromagnetic radiation all over the place. You know, I think another great example is the radio station. You know, they have these antennas that make magnetic fields, too, but they have to have 10,000 watts, 50,000 watts, in order, 100,000 watts, in order to be able to get a signal that's detectable, you know, 20 miles away or however far it wants to work. And that's just a detected signal. It's not powering the radio. So in this case, it is a strong magnetic field, but we have those all over the place anyway, and it doesn't really affect us, probably. It could, though.
I know, that's always...
I think you'd probably be okay. It's Disney. Disney doesn't hurt people, right?
Disney wouldn't hurt you with magnetic fields. Come on.
No, they wouldn't do that.
What about efficiency of charging? When I've thought of the idea of a future where, you know... You don't necessarily have to put your device onto something or plug something in order to charge it, where it's charged by the room. In my mind, I've considered that to be not the primary way that you charge your device, but rather if you happen to be sitting at home in your living room, you get like a trickle charge on your device that's better than nothing. Is that, or is it stronger in this case?
No, and this is strong. I mean, that powers a fan. It depends on the size of your coil. So if you want to put a coil in a smaller phone, then you wouldn't get as much power. It's about the size. And then the orientation of it. So that's why they get this, they list it as 45 to 90% efficient or something. It can be very efficient if you have it in the right orientation. So it wouldn't be a trickle charge. But again, it's this special room. It's not just any room.
It goes back to the room, the room that we may never have.
Well,
so and you know, the room's got metal walls and everything, so I don't know if you get signals from outside the walls into the room. So you get awesome wireless charging, but no Wi-Fi. Would that be worth it?
No, you have to.
I guess you could put Wi-Fi in the room, but you can't get it from outside the room.
Right. Yeah.
So Stoneweight in our chat room asks, why not a cabinet? Could you make just a cabinet and then you throw your devices in it, you shut it, and then
forget it? If you're going to put your device in a cabinet, why not just put it on a pad?
Good point. Well, sometimes I've found that you have to like just place it exactly on the pad. Like, I just want to throw it in there. It's a real problem.
So you want better pads.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's what I want. Yeah. Okay, so my car, while I'm driving my car, I can charge my devices. Can you ever envision being able to use your phone to charge it, like using the energy of typing it to make it charged? Would that work?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that say, okay, how could you, if you could get this continuous tiny trickle of charge, then it would be just a supplement to your normal charging. That's what Jason was saying, right? Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, what if you type on it when you push on it? Each push is like giving it a little energy. True, it does give it energy, but the amount is just way too small. You know, the other ideas would be charging with sound, ambient sound, again, way too small. Solar charging could possibly work. You know, the phone is a big flat surface anyway. It could get enough to at least, you know, feed you over until the next plug that you plug in. I think that would be one that would possibly work.
All right, so Disney, obviously, Disney Research, working on this. Demonstrating, you know, that it's possible. What's the next step for this sort of technology? Are we working towards a point to where our homes could do this at some point?
I mean, I would say that's definitely possible if you build the home like that. But what I feel that they're working on is a special room. You know, if this were a Disney World attraction, you could have this room, and now I have a light that I can just carry around, or a fan that's not plugged in. So you can have possibly some unique Disney-like experience that's almost magic, the magic of Disney, you could call it, right? Where you don't have to plug things in that particular room.
So it's kind of like a roller coaster of some kind.
Yeah, or it would be, or the room of terror, one of those haunted houses or something.
Okay, but not something I'm going to have in my living room or in my house anytime soon.
It's not going to be soon, definitely, and maybe we won't need it by the time you could get this. Maybe they're going to get better batteries, or maybe we'll decide that phones aren't the way we want to go and no one's going to use phones anymore. And then no one cares about wireless charging. I don't know.
I think the room of terror is the room that you have to plug your phone in order to charge it,
yeah,
to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're at now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Room of terror every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Rhett, thank you so much for joining us. Next time we have you on, we'll see your whole visual display of what you prepared. Rhett is an associate professor of physics at Southeastern Louisiana University and a contributor to Wired.com. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Rhett.
Take care.
Have a good night.
Bye.
All right, we received not one but two emails about the piece that we did yesterday on the eSight headset that lets legally blind people see, enables them to anyways. First, Casey Foster wrote in to help us out with our question about why insurance would not pay for the headset. Casey works in the insurance industry doing medical necessity reviews. Casey addressed two points here. First, Casey said FDA approval doesn't necessarily mean it should be paid for. FDA approvals means the benefits outweigh the risks after trials. In durable medical equipment, that means it shouldn't hurt you. Even if it provides minimal benefit, as long as it doesn't hurt you, it will be approved. And then Casey continued with the second point, medical necessity. Casey writes, from reading eSight's description, it is just an electronic version of glasses. All the claims about helping the legally blind are also true for regular glasses. My mother was legally blind my whole life, but led a very normal life in most functions, including driving. If a person can achieve nearly the same benefit from traditional glasses that cost less than $500 and can get a new set once per year, why should the insurance company pay the $10,000 for this new unproven device? Just because it's cool, maybe. They shouldn't. Insurance is often maligned in media and by the general public for constantly raising rates and deductibles. Overuse and abuse of services is a primary reason that these costs keep going up.
And we also got an email from Annette, who wrote, I just wanted to thank you for yesterday's episode of Tech News Today. It gave me hope for the future, hope that one day a nearly blind person, such as myself, could experience the world around me as my friends and family do. While listening to the podcast and writing this email on a Braille tablet running a 1.2 gigahertz processor and a heavily skinned Android KitKat, I began to think that the latest technology should not be used just for recreation, such as VR and high-resolution gaming, but to positively impact the world and its population.
Absolutely. Amen. Although, man, we got to get you off KitKat. KitKat's really outdated, but I imagine, like, God, Braille tablets. I want to see these things. That's amazing. I love that. Yeah. I love that there is bridge technology like this to help folks.
And again, the person that we talked about yesterday is a spokesperson for the company. Like, we don't know exactly how well this works for the general person, but they did say that she could read now and she couldn't before, and so she basically had to learn. She had read Braille her entire life and had to learn to read not Braille, we'll see.
Yeah, I just actually threw a link in there real quick, not to throw you off track, Brian, to an article from January 2016, so a year ago, a Braille Kindle. So I wonder if this is the same thing. If you scroll down, you see a picture of it. It's like your normal, ordinary tablet, but mm-hmm. with the raised Braille. That is so cool. Yeah, the Braille would have to change based on what you're looking at, and so that's really cool technology. That is really fascinating. I love, now that I know that exists, that's even awesomer. Thank you for sending that in. Coming up, the time of reckoning for Monopoly is upon us. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever been through the mortgage process, you know it's not the easiest thing in the world. You got to get all that information. There's a whole lot of hurdles that you have to jump over in order to make it happen. It's one of the most important decisions that you make in your life, to buy a home. So, of course, it's going to be a big challenge. But, you know, thankfully, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans can help you with that. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone that you can trust that has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you don't need to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. And you can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's perfect and just right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org. Number 3030, and we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
TNT's fan of the day is Khaled, who sent us this picture saying, "This is how I watch your show when I'm at work down here in Kuwait."
Yeah, excellent. With AirPods.
Yes. I hope you like your AirPods. Mine are on their way. They're supposed to come next week. They were supposed to, March 1st was the date, but they've come faster.
So I'm
very excited to try them out. I'll be wearing them all the time. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video, or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
Monopoly fans cast their votes, around 4 million votes, actually, and they've decided to get rid of one of my favorite pieces, the thimble. It's been there since 1935, but as of this fall, it'll be a collector's item. I mean, seriously, what Monopoly piece will I wear on my finger like a hat when I'm bored playing Monopoly?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, the top hat. I'll put that on my finger now. Fine, whatever.
My finger doesn't fit in the thimble, so I know yours doesn't. So
no, well, but
that's fake news.
I have fond it might fit on my pinky.
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. It would fit on the tip of my pinky, I think.
So this isn't set in stone yet. We don't know for sure that they're going to get rid of they might. They might not. They haven't revealed the final selections.
They want us to stay tuned until, what is it, March 19th. Mm-hmm. We find out for sure. I thought that it said that was definitely happening, but that there are other things that could possibly be gone.
Maybe.
I think we're saying goodbye to the thimble. Okay. I think that's guaranteed.
I can't believe it. I don't.
We have to accept the new reality that there is no thimble in Monopoly.
I guess what I read was it might not be gone forever.
Oh, it might come back. Yeah, that's true. There might be a thimble revolt.
Yeah, bring back the thimble.
Yeah,
thimble.
By the way, did you know 300 different versions of Monopoly? 300 different versions of Monopoly.
Like the board game, not just like the iPad. Does that include the iPad, the iPhone, the Android
phone? That's a good question. I don't know. I would imagine that would probably be in there, but that would only account for a few.
Mm-hmm.
Burke thinks that a chainsaw arm would be better instead of a thimble, and I 100% agree. Burke chat for the win.
Do you mean like an actual arm, or is that what you call a chainsaw arm? Like that part of the chainsaw is called an arm?
No. It's chainsaw arm, like in Evil Dead 2.
Okay, got it.
Ash, mm-hmm. basically. It's the Ash piece. I wonder if there's an Evil Dead version of Monopoly. They should make a 301th version, around that.
We should make a TNT version of Monopoly.
Oh, that would be fun to think about, mm-hmm. what the pieces would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the spots that you land on, too.
Mm-hmm.
You're out tomorrow.
I am.
You're like, peace out.
Yep, I'll be gone, going on a weekend away.
Fine. But that's okay. In your absence, I have David Spark, who's spent the whole week at the RSA security conference. So he's going to come in, talk about a little news, talk about RSA and all the security stuff that's going to frighten you, and a few other things, because it's Friday. I'm sure hopefully we'll have a nice thing to end with.
Well, I'll be sure to watch from the beach.
Yeah, you should do that. Mm-hmm. Take time out from your time away to focus again on the show.
Okay, I will.
Because you don't get enough of TNT mm-hmm. throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
Neither do you. In fact, you can watch TNT live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
We are everywhere. We are on Google Play Music. We're on iTunes. We're on YouTube. We're everywhere. You can find all those ways to subscribe. Even Apple TV. Go to twit.tv/TNT. Scroll through. Pick 10 or 12 different ways to subscribe because you just want it everywhere. If we are everywhere, you want us to be everywhere with you. I know you do. And if you want to come see us in person, please do. We love having a live audience. Email tickets@twit.tv. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I am at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian. As always, thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio and helping us create Burke Chat. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.